Good morning, everybody, and welcome into the Mary Griffith Show for this Friday. Scott Hardy in for Mary, and of course, the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored, as always, by Harvest Ridge Coffee, distributed by Refreshment Services Pepsi. Premier coffees, roasted and delivered in small batches. Blends like the Kona Blend, Colombian Supreme, or Signature Blend Decaf. You can pick that up. You can have it delivered to your door if you'd like, or pick it up wherever you buy coffee at the convenience store near you. That's Harvest Ridge Coffee. Glad it's time now for our usual visit with members of the Quincy Fire Department alongside firefighter Chad Trueblood. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning. Thanks
glad to have you along here. And, of course, the police announced yesterday that a suspect had been caught in the fire, which the investigators kind of suspected was arson, just after looking at that. Of course, now I'm not going to ask you to comment on anything, but fires like that are just, I imagine they're really a problem for the department, just the fact that somebody's setting those, especially in that setting, because you had so much to deal with.
Yeah, that was definitely a very large fire for us to deal with.
Yeah, because not only, you kind of, I think maybe made the decision, it's like, well, the fire was kind of far along that it wasn't so much a matter of saving that building, but there were nearby other buildings that you had to worry about.
That's right, yep. Yeah, trying to protect the other exposures, keeping it from spreading from any of the other buildings.
Yeah, and which you did, giving credit to you guys, and you were there for a long time as well, because hopefully you weren't one of the crews that did kind of were watching for the hot spots.
I come in the next morning, and we ended up doing some of the hot spots then, but I was fortunate enough not to have to. The other guys really had to work their butts off the night before.
Right, right, and so you would take shifts, be there for an hour or two, watching that, up in the middle of the night after fighting that fire for about 4 or 5 hours, so thank you for that very, very much. But that, it just unnecessarily puts you guys in danger when there's so many other things that you could be doing.
Yeah, I mean, when they come in, especially something that big, we've had a number of these vacant fires that have been popping up. So we've definitely got a problem that's been going on that they've been kind of looking into. Definitely kind of hinders things a little bit.
Yeah, it does, and it kind of, that also kind of sparks talk about, what's behind it. And, I don't even know if you can speculate on that or not, because every fire is kind of different, right?
Yeah, they're all different, kind of unique to their own place, but there's been a number of them.
Yeah, and as a result of that, you've been a little more busy than normal, and you're starting to come up, you're starting to deal with a problem, and it involves members of the public and some of your equipment.
We have, especially, it's always been kind of an issue over time, but the last few fires, it's really been kind of a major issue. We've had people running over our fire hoses. I know they issued a few tickets at this last one at the Doyle Manufacturing Building. They issued a few tickets to some people that run over, but the tickets don't really seem to be enough. It's a huge safety factor for us. That's our supply line, so if we've got crews inside, for example, and they're on a hose line fighting the fire, and somebody hits that hose and they lose the water supply, that's their lifeline. If we're going to lose all the ground that we've gained, everything too. So it's a major problem for...
Yeah, it is, and we'll explain for a few reasons. One, as you mentioned, that's the lifeline, because people don't realize how fast a fire can spread, especially when it's got a lot of fuel.
Yep. Yeah, and if we've got to stop and break that hose down, it punctures the hose, so now that hose is no good. We've got to stop and break down. We've got to lay a new supply line. All that, it takes a lot of time, and we're going to lose a lot of ground that we've already gained.
That was my next question. Those hoses are made for holding water. They're not like the garden hose where your car can run over and it's okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they're not made to be run over at all. It ruins the hose. They've got to be repaired. Sometimes we can repair them, and we just shorten the section, cut the bad section out. But that's not something that we can do on scene. That's just going to be done over time. It's costly, and it's just not a safe practice.
Now, I imagine, I'm not sure, but was this a case where you had to use hydrants from like a fairly far distance? Did you have to cross Broadway with one of those? Or
they did. I was not on scene that night, but from what I've heard, they did end up crossing Broadway. They had multiple hydrants they were running from. They had a lot of supply laid down that night.
Okay, and of course, some folks not realizing what's going on, just think, I have to get where I'm going, and I'll go around this barricade that the police have set up.
Yeah, they get to watching the fire, looking to see what's going on, not paying attention, or they just kind of got their own agenda and they've got somewhere they need to be. But we just need people to really pay attention and not run over our hose lines.
Yeah, and really, I imagine you would prefer that folks not even go near the scene
That's
of
correct.
The fire.
Yeah, yep. Watch for the barricades, watch for police that are out there, you know, kind of blocking traffic for us. Pay attention to the roadway, detour, find another route.
Yeah, because basically you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, God forbid if you are involved in something and you're just standing there watching, you just never know what could happen. Because, again, fires spread in unpredictable ways, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, folks, again, firefighter True Blood here just spreading the warning. Don't go near the fires. Let the folks in, you know, the TV, radio, newspaper will tell you what's going on. The fire department will tell you what's going on as soon as they get all the facts. So, let us know. You haven't had to deal with much in terms of river rescues this year, have you? I mean, that's been fairly quiet, right?
It has been fairly quiet. I think they've had just a couple that they've been responding to. They've just been out on standby for some other instances. But so far this year, it's actually been pretty calm.
Yeah, and this is the time of year when we kind of mention the fact that the Quincy Fire Department is, in fact, involved in rescues on the rivers, or you might even get called into some other rescues with some of the agreements you may have with other departments, either in Adams County or even in Missouri.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, the water rescue is a big part of our department.
Yeah, and which means that just another thing that you guys train for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll all be out training. We've all got to have so many hours that we've got to be out training on the river. Which is kind of good, just kind of get our hands on things and everything anyway. Get us a little more acclimated, getting kind of used to the layout of the river. But
yeah, and no time to stop and go noodling for gar or anything like that.
No,
no, of course not there. But yeah, folks, please be safe. We want you to kind of avoid those areas, you know, so that way you can't run over a hose. You will be ticketed, and really can't say whether or not the penalties may escalate. That's kind of up to other authorities, though, right?
Yeah. And I'm not sure what the cost of the ticket and everything that it is, but the biggest thing for us is we just would rather avoid it altogether.
Yeah, you really, really would. So, I mean, do you see much in terms of, like, heat issues on days like today with certain people? Because you go out on medical calls, too, right? So
we do, yeah. Medical calls are a huge majority of our calls that we run. We definitely do see heat injuries and stuff like this when days like today. I know it's supposed to be pretty hot today. So make sure you're staying hydrated, finding a cool spot, kind of get cooled down, just watch what you're doing being outside all day long.
Yeah, I imagine also if you know somebody who is, shut away, older, things like that, check on them and check on pets too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah we've still got people that, don't have air conditioning in their homes, and, you know, it gets pretty hot in those houses, especially on a day like today. So, yeah, definitely check on your loved ones.
Yeah, get a fan, like the Salvation Army Fan Program, do that as well. So that way you can be safe for sure. So are there any other topics of interest that folks need to know about the Quincy Fire Department that you want them to know about? Kind of like your chance to vent.
I think that was the big one today. We've had plenty of instances of people running over our fire hoses, so that was kind of the big one we really wanted to talk about, get the message out there for everybody to kind of pay attention and keep their distance.
Right.
Stop running over the fire hoses.
Yeah, I can remember several fires. Of course, there was the fire at the Newcomb here, which, you know, and they do draw large crowds, but at the same time, you guys are looking for hydrants. You're looking for ways to limit the damage, to limit the spread of the fire, because that's on your mind, to knock it down, but also limit the spread. And it's a tribute to your professionalism that you're not yelling more at people to just get out of the way.
Right.
You know, and it would be justified in a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get an issue with too many people being around, but for the most part, people do keep their distance. You know, they kind of gather around the area, but we ask them to move out of the way. They typically do listen, and not too big of a deal.
That is, and that is a very good thing that they do that. So, folks, again, if you are in, you know, hopefully this won't happen again for a while, but if you're in the vicinity of a fire, go on by. No need to stop and rubberneck and look, because that can, like, put firefighters in danger, especially if we're running over hoses, which aren't supposed to be run over. Firefighter Chad Trueblood, thank you so much for being in. We appreciate you taking time out, and we will let you get back at it. And, of course, you stay cool, too, on this day.
Yeah, we'll do our best. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you so much, Firefighter Chad Trueblood. 927, we'll update you on the first look at the latest commodity markets from the Chicago Board of Trade on the way on the morning show, or rather on the Mary Griffith Show on WTAD. All righty, 9:31 now, and before we get back to the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee, let's head up to the IRSA Farmers Co-op for our first look at the latest commodity prices for this Friday. It's right ahead of the latest WASDE report from the USDA. That'll be out at 11. We'll see how the markets react, but let's check in now with the IRSA Farmers Co-op for the latest prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Corn for September is down at 398. December is down 1 at 415. Soybeans for August is down 3 at 1009. November it's down 1 at 1012. Wheat for September is down 2 at 552. Soybean meal for July is at 268. Lean hogs for October is up at 9260. Feeder cattle for October is up 2 at 321. Live cattle for October is up 2 at 219.97. Crude oil is up 1 at 66.52. And the Dow Jones is up 168 at 42,356. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. And we'll be back with you in an hour to get the latest prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and the IRSA Farmers Co-op there. 9:32, we are 2 weeks out from celebrating WTAD's 100th birthday. We're kind of recognizing the official date of July the 25th. We're going to be having kind of an on-air party here all throughout the morning show and the Mary Griffith Show, so you'll be hearing a lot of folks from around the community who will be here. But what we want to do is we want to go ahead and take a look back at kind of how we got here. We'll be talking with a lot of folks who you are going to recognize their voice and their name over the next couple of weeks. And we started off with the guy who really, in my opinion and a lot of people's opinions, kind of the architect of the current setup here of WTAD, how we do what we do and why we do what we do. And that's former General Manager Mike Moyers. Glad to have you here, sir.
What time does he get here?
Oh, about 20, 25 minutes. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, that's very kind of you to say that. Yeah, this, we're sitting in the WTAD studios right this moment that when I came here in 1998, this was Pam Hunt's office. And none of the stuff that's behind me, which right now is like big computer racks with all the hard drives and whatnot to make this place go. This place was big enough to where we literally would have meetings and sales meetings and all of the above. And in 98, late 98, Star Radio came in, and we had three owners at the time, and the three owners came up to see what they had bought, which was, I always find. In radio, you buy it, then you go look at it. There's no kidding. You really do. Oh, let's negotiate. Oh, really? You know, and that's what you do. So you kind of agree. It would be like you buying a car and going, is it blue? And then, but anyway, they came and they went, oh, cool.
And there's reasons for that, because they're more interested in, like, the strength of the signal, you know, the dial position. But let you in on an industry secret, how much money we bill each year. That's the main thing.
Yeah, and then you've got to look. And some of the most interesting and creative stuff I've ever seen written are the P&Ls that you get from people that you're trying to buy this stuff from. It's like, there's no way you did that. It's like a bunch of car salesmen getting together and lying to each other. I sold 38 cars. Like, what the hell you
sure,
did?
Sure. It's like William Shakespeare and Francis Bacon telling each other stories. I slayed 12 monsters this year.
I'm like, not dead yet.
That's right. Exactly. But because if some of you may not even know this, but a lot of folks know that for a lot of years, WTAD and its sister station, WQCY, were up on the fourth, originally on the ninth floor and the 10th floor of the WCU building. I can't remember the new name now. They've just changed the name.
It's still the WCU building, but
right.
they moved there in 44, and that's where the studios were. And then TAD and QCY had been sold numerous times, mm-hmm. and Lee Enterprises brought them in at 44. And then in 54, I believe it was 54, they put WQCY-FM on the air. And then Lee Enterprises owned these facilities until 1996. And then after that, they were sold to a number of Eastern Broadcasting bought it first, and then a number, TAD was sold a number of times, and then in 98, Star Radio purchased them, and Star Radio's had them ever since.
Right, and then it was just, because by that time, I imagine, just, you know, you come in and the decision is just kind of like, we need more room.
Yeah, well, back then, it was an entirely different time. In the 80s and 90s, but in the 90s, you had big radio groups that were coming in and buying bunches of radio stations in one market. The FCC would only allow a group to have five stations in said market. Well, when Star Radio came here in 98, they bought, they bought the four from Telemedia, who owned, or from Citadel, who owned the group at the time. Then they bought KGRC and KZZK. Well, they gave them six. All of a sudden, you got six radio stations, and you got to get rid of one. Which one do you get rid of?
Mm-hmm.
And they took months to get that done. And then when they finally got it done, then they were able to conglomerate and move all the stations from the WCU building down here to where we're at in the Lincoln Douglas now. So we had to renovate this entire area and turn it into turn it into what it is today. And that took a while. And the thing about it was Phil Riley, who's still our engineer here. Phil Riley did all of this pretty much. He and another guy did the majority of it, and here we are. And he bought top-notch stuff. We bought all local stuff. All of our technical stuff came locally, and he did a marvelous job of putting this all together.
Right, and you mentioned that rack behind you. Most of that, we use some of it, but not nearly as much as we used to, because now nearly all of it is all downstairs in the basement, and can be controlled remotely if need be. It's amazing to see. It really, really is. But there was a certain bit of charm about being over at the WCU building, because basically, I don't know if the decor has changed now, but for the longest time, it had not. So if you wanted to know what it was like in a 1940s black noir film, you could go to 510 Main and go up in the upper floors and find out for yourself.
Well, when I first became affiliated with its organization, it was August of 79, and you would go upstairs in the WCU building, and the first thing you'd do, you would pass through the television department, and the TV studios up there were about as big as a hall closet. I mean, they were teeny tiny, and they had the newsroom, and then way back in the back on the south end of the building, you had QCY on the right-hand side, and you had TAD on the left-hand side, and they had these huge doors for insulation and all of this, and it was, I mean, you had, if you walked in, you had to be real quiet.
Right.
And everybody would, it was old-time radio. I mean, it really was, and it was like, what in the heck? It's changed so much in the last 50 years, but it was an interesting time, and the friends you get to meet, and the fun you got to have, you know, back in the day was, there's one story after another, after another, after another.
Yeah, there really, really is. I must say the view here at the WTAD studio has improved tremendously from the view at the WCU, because the only view that you had from TAD was there was a back window, and it was basically the brick facade of the building right next door.
And that's what it was, yeah.
And the only time you knew what was going on was when it was snowing.
And then if you went across the hall to QCY, you could look out the window, which the fire escape led to, and you could look at the Herald Wig, so you could see the Herald Wig.
Right, exactly. I was up there the one time that everybody in the WCU had to be evacuated, because somebody up in TV left something in the microwave a little too long, setting off the fire alarm.
Imagine that.
Telling everybody, getting out. And then, of course, you had staffers like, well, should I go? Should I not? It's a fire alarm. Yes, go. We'll put something on, but yes, go.
Yeah, you're 10 stories up.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's your life. It's not that important. Oh, but goodness gracious. Yeah, it was quite a sea change, though, to move down here, because it really signaled a different way of operating and a way of doing things. Because as you mentioned earlier, you did have this rule where stations were expanding. And at the same time, you had the development of what we call automation systems, which let you run programs almost totally unattended. So that way you could maximize the effort of the staff that you did have. But
yeah. Well, when I became general manager here, it was kind of a very, very trying time for us because, you know, you had all the big transition. You had some key people from TAD had left, and it was kind of a major upheaval. Plus the fact, you know, when you purchased or when Star Radio purchased these groups, they suddenly had two of everything. I mean, you had two sales staffs, you had two on-air staffs, you had two, we almost had 50 people on staff. And I got the job as the interim general manager. And I had only met the owners on one occasion, and it was very briefly. And I was just an Indian here. I mean, I was like, whatever. To make a long story short, I visit with the key principal owner, and he says, we're giving you the job as the interim general manager. So he says, your three things is keep the cash flow at this level, don't get us sued, and start paring down your staff.
Right.
And he said, if you want the job, then you can apply for it to be the general manager. And I said, so I'm basically a placeholder? And he goes, sure. And I go, okay. And that's how it all started. So I go from having all these people to where I had to get it down to a certain level, and that you don't make a lot of friends when you do that. You really don't. And it was very difficult for me because I had never been in that position. I'd also learned it very quickly how much about the radio business I didn't know. As my friend Sam Rinella used to say, they don't know and they don't know they don't know. That's me. And so I started boning up on all these business courses that I'd never taken and a lot of stuff to just try to learn how to organize all this stuff. And it was indeed an interesting time. But I can say this on the positive end. The revenue that we were able to generate back in 98, 99, 2000 early, more than offset whatever we were doing. And we were very, very profitable at that time. And all of a sudden, it's like you've got five stations to manage. I only wanted one. I wanted this one here. I wanted TAD. But all of a sudden, I've got KGRC and WCOY. And just, you know, you had all this stuff. And no one had ever, I mean, there weren't a lot of clusters in the country at the time, so there wasn't a handbook. There was no owner's manual. It was like, well, how are you going to do this? And so Gary Wright, who was the general manager of WKAN in Kankakee, became my mentor, and he would drive down here once a month and spend 3 or 4 days, and we would just kind of brainstorm how we're going to do this and how big the sales staff is going to be and all that kind of stuff. And so it was truly a work in progress. It was just, you know, try this.
Right. And that's what people don't realize is that that's part of the process of just working in this industry in general, is that in order to really to do well, no matter what it is, what side, you always have to be learning.
Yeah.
You always have to be learning.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that we actually talked to each other? I do. I don't. You may not. I do, though.
I don't, but I can tell you this, and I'm so proud of what you have done here. But when you were the party with Hardy, you owned PM Drive on QCY. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy was a rock star, and I don't mean a little bit. He was a rock star, and it was a party with Hardy on 99Q, and man, you owned it.
I was just shouting like a fool on Friday afternoons is what I was doing, and playing people on the radio and just, you know, being loud and just kind of mulling my way through it. You know, the funny thing is, when I first started, I worked at a different station over in Northwest Missouri, and it was a more laid back. And our mutual friend, Dennis Oliver, was like, hey, they kind of want you to perk it up a little bit when I first got started. And it was like, oh, okay.
And you became a screamer.
And apparently I did. So, no, I was just going to tell you, the first time that we met was in the early 90s, either 90 or 91. At this point, you were doing other things, but yet you were following one of your loves, was broadcasting basketball games. And it was, you know, by this time, you know, it's like, you know, It's like, I'm dealing with one of the DJs, and we've got an afternoon game. It was probably down like in Collinsville or something like that, you know. And it's like, hey, who have I got here? What's going on? Who have I got? It's Scott. Yeah. Oh, hey, Mike, how are you doing? Just do this. Tell me when to go, and we'll be fine. So, because it's like, he didn't have time for any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but no, it was a Quincy High basketball game. Yeah. So it was like, I, you know, and at the time we weren't automated. We were still playing CDs one right after the other for 4 to 6 hours, and
yeah.
you're there in the studio, and that's what you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I had some great producers back then. Pete Brinkman was one of my favorites of all time. Pete Brinkman had the ability. We would take a 60-second timeout during a basketball game, and Pete would pop on, and he would tell a 52-second joke, and the joke would kill you. And then so now you're laughing, and he'd go, and you're on. And so then we'd come back, and Hibbert and I would just be crying, you know. And people, I know people at home were going, what happened here? And this didn't happen once a game. This happened like all night. And so
oh, yeah.
Pete kept us pretty loose.
Oh, yeah. As soon as you mention his name, I can see his face right now. Right now, from California, love just, you know, was a big personality, was just smiling while he told the joke. His eyes would get a little big, and he's waiting for it, waiting for 10 seconds, and then he'd tell you the punchline. Oh, you're on. I can just see him doing
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can just see him doing that. So, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Now, I've been blessed. You know, like I said, I met Jeff Dorsey in July of 1979. Think about this, in July of 1979, and I had mentioned earlier, at the time I was handling the advertising for a car dealership I was working for, and I had mentioned to Don Graw, who was my sales rep, I said, if you guys ever need a color man, I used to kind of do some of that stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, I really didn't. So anyway, you know, so Dorsey comes in one day to get his car worked on. I never met him, so I go back to the service area and I introduce myself, and 3 weeks later I get a phone call. It's like, would you like to do color on some football games? And I said, yeah, sure, why not, you know. And so I go to the management at the car dealership, and they're like, I said, I'm going to need to be off on these dates and all this. And they said, oh, okay, no problem, for football. So we go to the football season ends, and Dorsey goes, hey, you want to do, you know, the Blue Devil games with me? And I'm like, yeah, I really do. So I go to management, and boy, they're like, really?
That's a lot more days.
How are you working 60 hours a week now? Now you're going to do all this? I said, I can do it. And so I did. And,
right.
One thing led to another. And then in 82, I came here full time and brought Mike Lawrence and Jeff Myers with me, and of sports rap fame. And the four of us together, all of a sudden, it was a party.
Yeah.
And we doubled their revenue on TAD in 12 months. I still have the ink pen that Gary Schmetting gave me. We doubled their revenue. And then from there, a few years, we started working on QCY. And we started working on getting that format flipped, and that took 3 years.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, we got that done, and the rest. We did such a good job, they sold us.
Sure. Well, sure. And we'll talk a little bit about the seismic event known as the changeover for WQCY into creating the beast that was 99Q, and a lot more, and about the personal connection that people seem to form with not just a radio station, this radio station in the community. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Mike Moyer is my guest here on The Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee on WTAD. Welcome back to The Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee. Scott Hardy in for Mary. And we are talking some of the history of WTAD leading up to our 100th birthday celebration coming up here 2 weeks from today on the 25th. And that will start at 7 and continue until 10. And in the lead up to that, you're going to be hearing a lot of folks from back in WTAD's past. Speaking of that, you mentioned the fact that of, you know, kind of reviving TAD in the 80s and getting it back and, you know, tying in the sports and the community as well. When I first arrived in this community in August of 89, and very, very soon I learned that 4 years previously, you really kind of shook up not just the listening habits, but kind of in a way the community, with the format change of 99.5 from one format to a kind of like my change when I got there, from one format to a very different format.
Well, we totally blew it up, and it was a situation where it was a collective effort by a number of people on staff at the time. Hank Mayhall was the ops manager, and Van Gable was like a promotions director, and then you had Dorsey and Lawrence and Myers, and we were all kind of together saying, you could really make something happen here. At the time, Lee Enterprises was sitting on a 50,000-watt blowtorch, and they were playing beautiful music, and the only thing that we were really able to sell was sports. We, at one time, WTAD was the St. Louis Cardinal baseball affiliate, yes, and we were also on WQCY, the Cubs affiliate. And so we had the whole sports market line locked up to go in conjunction with all of the games we were doing, the Fighting Illini and all the local basketball and football and soccer and things. And then we had Sports Wrap on WTAD, which was had come over from KGRC back when the guys moved over in 82, and we had it on from 5 to 7. 5:30 to 7, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7, 5:30 to 7, whatever it was. But trying to convince the upper-level echelon about making that change was a process. And I mean, it was really a process. Here's how strong it was. The year we were finally got the green light to blow this thing up, the Cubs won the division. So in 1984, the Cubs win the division. Should have gone to the World Series, but Leon Durham lets the ball go into right field, and the rest is history.
Yep.
And then we fire them, and then we pull the plug on the Cubs, and we had a great relationship with the Cubs managers, and they were like, "What you're doing?" I said, "Well, we're flipping the format on this thing," and they're like, "Oh, okay." But we did all that. We put it all into place, and the beauty of it was we basically didn't have to ask for anyone to apply for announcer jobs. Dennis Oliver came over from KQ. You know, Liz Lukowski came over from KGRC. You know, David P. Norman came over. We already had Reggie Coleman on staff. We had Dorsey on staff. We're good to go. Mm-hmm. We're rock solid, good to go, all the above. And then on April 25th of 85, we rolled that out, and the rest was it. And the market changed like that. It was like that, and the phone was ringing. That's the radio station everybody listened to. And so now we were really, really doing well. And basically, as I said, we were printing money, and we did such a wonderful job that Lee Enterprises sold it 18 months later.
Yes.
So, and didn't give us a shot to buy it. I mean, a couple of us were trying to get it bought then, but we were kids. I was still, you know, I was 30, and
oh my gosh,
you know, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, thinking to about at 30 to, you know, go to a bank, get financing, get business part. Oh, I couldn't even imagine.
We had a couple of local businessmen who were really wanting to do it, but they wouldn't. Lee wouldn't talk to us. They just wouldn't talk to us.
Right.
And then when the Eastern Broadcasting came in, they made some changes and whatnot, and that didn't go well with a certain me, and so I left. I went over to GEM and worked over there for 3 or 4 years and enjoyed that. So had a nice run there.
Right. But yeah, we were talking in the last 5 minutes here about there's something about this radio station where it's like, yes, you are talking to people directly in other radio stations, but not to the extent that you are here.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, you're almost having like conversations with people, and you're giving them, a lot of people, you know, will, for lack of a better term, bag on AM. Oh, it's a poor signal. Oh, it's this, it's that. Well, it's still the place where people go when they want to find out something that's going on right now. And there's always a value in that, and there's always going to be a value in that, and it just makes it so special and really kind of an honor to, you know, be given the reins to run something like this. I feel really lucky to do it.
Well, like I said, I've been blessed my whole life with a lot of things, and this is one of it. You know, I always wanted to have something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be a play-by-play guy and have my own team. I did for 20 years.
Right.
Okay. You know, when you get to do what you want to do, you know, what else is there? You know, it was fun every day to come to work. You know, back in the early 80s, we had so much fun. Lawrence and Myers and Dorsey and I had so much fun. And, you know, and then later on you come to work, you couldn't wait to get here. The hours you worked were ridiculous hours. During the sports season, they were ridiculous. You know, I'd get here like 6 in the morning you know, I'd be in the Quad Cities doing a Blue Devil game and get home like at 1:30 in the morning and be like, hey, I get to go to Springfield tomorrow because it you know, it's like
while driving back and forth on icy roads from time to time, things like that.
Yeah,
so
well, you know, it was just it never had a close call. Only the only time I really had a close call, Jeff and I were driving, Dorsey and I were driving over to do the sectional finals in Springfield against Springfield Southeast, and we lost control of the car, and it spun around in the interstate, but he was able to keep the thing, and we went to the game, and they lost. And it was one of the few times Bruce Douglas lose a game, and we lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was before the big run, before the 64-game win streak. But
gotcha.
That was the last game they lost before that run. But, you know, this has been an adventure for me. It's been excitement to get a chance to do what you needed to do. One of the wonderful things that Howard Doss said to me one time, he said, just run it like it's your place. He said, I'll stay out of your way. Just run it like it's your own place. And he did. He gave me, for 18 years, he gave me the green light to do a number of things. And I can only remember a couple of times where he'd say, explain this for me. What were you thinking about when you did that?
Right.
And then I, you know.
And Howard's very good at staying out of your way, because it's like, you know, I think I finally introduced myself to him. I'd seen him, and he'd seen me, but it's like I'd never said, hey, Scott Hardy, nice to meet you, because he's always, you know, basically he'll go into a room, he'll talk on the phone for a while and, you know, do things, and then off he goes, and it's like, see you next year. And well, that's how it is.
I'm 3 weeks older than Howard, and I learned more stuff from him in that 18 years. I mean, stuff that I use today with the other business my wife and I have, but, you know, he was just... He was the rock solid. The late Jack Whitley was the opposite. Jack had all these crazy ideas, and Jack was so much fun. He was a lawyer in Chicago. Oh God! And he was 6'7", and he drove a Camry, and he would pull up on here, and he would extract himself from that Camry, and I would be sitting in my office looking at this, going, how in the heck is he going to get out of that car? And he'd get out, and, you know, he'd come in with this big smile. He'd say,
stretch.
Yeah, I think we ought to flip the format on this station to do this. We're not. We got to do this. We're not going to do that, Jack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll see you later.
Well, that's great. No, you didn't have to worry about, you know, like the suggestive thing. It's like, well, that's a good idea. I think we should just explore the current parameters of what we're doing.
Well, when we built the tower over in Northeast Missouri, you know, we had put a deal together. Phil had done all the legwork, and he finally found a guy that we would sell us a property. So I tell Jack, Phil and I are going to go over and talk to this guy and all this kind of stuff. Jack said, who is a lawyer? And he says, oh, I'll come down. And I said, no. I said, we'll probably do the deal. We did the deal on a napkin. Swear to God. We put the deal together on a napkin and had it trans, you know, and that's the end of it. But we had a wonderful time. This is a beautiful place to work. We appreciate all of you people who have listened over the years. And to the client base, thank you. We appreciate that.
Yes.
We appreciate that.
Couldn't have been better said. Mike, thank you so much for being here. Thank you. I really appreciate you coming in.
Proud of you, Scott.
Oh, thank you. I'm proud of you, too. We're coming up now on the latest news from Fox, top of the hour on WTAD.